Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today I welcome you to Pacifica Radio's national coverage of today's primary elections in New Jersey, New Mexico, North and South Dakota, Montana, and California. We'll begin with an overview of this roiling election season that has seen outsiders like Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump soar in popularity, Trump behind a surge of right-wing anger at political elites, immigrants, and the press, a resentment that the reality TV star is stoking. And on the left, Sanders' insurgent campaign has attracted record numbers of young supporters who see Bernie as a rare politician who has not sold out and is taking on a corrupt, money-driven system that enriches the 1% at the expense of working and middle-class Americans while turning their generation into debtors. Thomas Edsel, a professor of journalism at Columbia University, whose New York Times column on demographic and strategic trends in American politics appears every Wednesday, he joins us. His latest book is The Age of Austerity, How Scarcity Will Remake American Politics, and his latest article at the New York Times is The Anti-PC Vote. Then, with the polls just closing in New Jersey, David Redlawsk, a polling expert and professor of political science at Rutgers University, joins us to assess the extent of the expected victory for Hillary Clinton and what that means in terms of the delegate count. And then we'll examine the races in the New Mexico primary ahead of the results coming in at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Lydia Camarillo, the vice president of the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project, who serves as the CEO of the 2000 Democratic National Convention, joins us to discuss the critical Latino vote in New Mexico and California, where there is a generational split with younger Latinos voting for Sanders while older voters support Hillary Clinton. We will also get an update on the SVREP's voter registration campaign, F the Wall. Then finally, as the final showdown between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders reaches its climax in California, with the polls closing in 3 hours from now, we'll hear from Margie Amaro, a managing director at Purple Strategies and founder of Momentum Analysis, a Democratic public opinion research firm whose clients included the DNC, the DCCC, Mayors Against Illegal Drug Guns, Emily's List, members of Congress, nonprofits, and hundreds of campaigns around the country. With the Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump melting down, we'll look ahead to who the final candidates in the 2016 presidential race might be. And joining us now is Thomas Edsel, a professor of journalism at Columbia University. His column in the New York Times on demographic and strategic trends in American politics appears every Wednesday, and he's the author of The New Politics of Inequality, and his latest book is The Age of Austerity. And he has a recent op-ed at the New York Times, The Anti-PC Vote. Welcome to Background Briefing, Thomas Edsel.
Good to be with you.
And Thomas, what do you make of the latest stories from Bloomberg, and now the Huffington Post is running a headline saying that Trump is melting down and the campaign is imploding? Is it conceivable that this race that's been crazy, unpredictable, the pundits have been proven wrong time and time again, is it likely to take a few more lurches and detours before it's over?
Well, I'm not sure if the Trump campaign is imploding. His base of support may be weakening. There was substantial losses for him basically over the past week, especially when you look at what are called prediction markets, betting people who bet on the future outcome of the election. He lost a lot of ground and Hillary picked up a lot of ground. All that suggested that the Mexican judge, the Trump University, and the assault on the press did not help him, nor have all these comments afterwards. So it may be that the viability of his campaign will implode. But we've made many predictions, at least I have, that have not come true about Trump, so I'm a little reluctant to jump aboard any ship at this point.
Right, but Senator Lindsey Graham said today that he can't support Trump, and he's hopes Trump is looking for an off-ramp, which suggests that there may be Is there a way? Would there be a way? It would all depend on him, whether he wanted to find a way out. Obviously, he's got a massive ego and he likes to win and considers himself a winner. But on the other hand, if he faces humiliation and public ridicule, he may want to find a way out.
He might, but it would be very difficult for him. One, as you say, he hates admitting that he's lost. And two, he really has the nomination now sewed up. There's virtually no chance, barring some new major event, that he would be challenged at the convention. So he would have to himself give up the nomination, which would be, for him, an extraordinary act. And maybe it could happen. The guy is a loose cannon. But I wouldn't hold my breath.
Sure. Well, let's talk about the races that we'll be looking at in the next hour, as the polls have just closed in New Jersey. New Jersey has 142 Democratic delegates and 51 Republican delegates that on a winner-take-all basis. Of course, all Democratic delegates are awarded proportionally. The big one tonight, of course, is California, with 548 for the Democrats and 172 for the Republicans. Not that there's any contest still left there. Montana, 27 for the Democrats, 27 for the Republicans. New Mexico, 43 for the Democrats, 24 for the Republicans. North Dakota, 23 for the Democrats, no Republican caucus there. And South Dakota with 25 for both the Democrats and 29 for the Republicans. So, and of course, a week later, we have the District of Columbia. But the long and the short of it is, Thomas Edsel, that the big enchilada, if you will, is California, right? And we won't know that. The polls don't close for another 3 hours. But what do you make of the AP declaring declaring Hillary the winner? That's certainly irritated a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters.
It did, and I think what's going to be next in terms of determining what Sanders will do is the outcome of the California race. If he wins in California, it would give him some justification for continuing the fight all the way to the convention. If he loses California, he's going to have a harder time making that case. I think, from what I understand of the polls in New Jersey, that Hillary is going to win there. I don't know about the other states, but the other big one is New Jersey today. And for him to sustain or to maintain that he is still a viable candidate, I think he has to pull off a victory in California.
So I know it sounds like inside baseball, but what do you make of these reports that Tad Devine, the head of the campaign, is more conciliatory and whereas Weaver wants to take it to the mat and take it all the way? Is there you're aware of any divisions within the Sanders campaign?
It could well be. Tad Devine is more of he's been a regular Democrat all his life. He comes out of Rhode Island Democratic politics. So I think that he's more accustomed to doing what the sort of consensus strategy would be, which is for Bernie to endorse Hillary and join the fight against Trump. So that there could well be that split. But the guy who's going to make the decision is Bernie Sanders.
Sure. And what are what's the significance of the other races that we'll be looking at this evening? New Jersey, we talked about New Jersey. In fact, David Redlosk from Rutgers is going to be joining us in a minute to talk about if there are any results coming in. The polls have closed there. What about New Mexico, Montana, North and South Dakota? Any significance there? I know it's, the whole, I have to admit that the politics in our country are pretty bizarre, aren't they, Thomas? I mean, most people live in states that don't matter a damn, and if you live in Iowa or New Hampshire, you're in the center of the universe. But we're in an odd situation here in California where finally we've actually become relevant.
Yeah, but only for the primary.
Right, exactly.
The, forgotten soon after.
Yeah.
The New Mexico one is interesting because it will determine if Sanders has made inroads among minority votes, Hispanic votes in particular there. And it'll be very interesting to look at the exit poll results out of New Mexico, the Democratic primary in New Mexico. The other states are, well, New Jersey is important, but South Dakota and Montana are really red states. And how well either candidate does there is important for how many delegates they pick up, but it's not an it's not likely to be an indicator of how they will do in the general election. The New Mexico and New Jersey ones are more significant in that sense, especially New Mexico is a swing state and could be important in the Electoral College.
So, is David Redlawsk with us yet? David, are you there?
I am indeed, Ian.
David,
hello.
Hello, David. Say hello to Thomas Edsel.
How are you?
Hi, Thomas.
How are you?
All right.
And David Redlawsk is a polling expert and professor of political science at Rutgers University. He's the co-author of the book, Why Iowa, How Caucuses and Sequential Elections Improve the Presidential Nominating Process. So, any news from your state of New Jersey, David?
No news, really, unfortunately, yet. It's the polls closed about 10 minutes ago or so. It's going to take at least a little bit before the results start trickling in. The polling, though, ahead of the election, ahead of the primary, is pretty strongly for Hillary Clinton. The Real Clear Politics average for her is plus 20 over Bernie. So it's not expected to be much of a nail-biter here.
So, given that the Associated Press have already put her ahead based upon their communications with superdelegates, what happens if she wins? Does she have enough delegates, pledged delegates, as opposed to superdelegates, to reach the threshold?
She, even had they not, essentially, apparently, as the Associated Press was calling around yesterday, they found 12 unnamed superdelegates who told them their commitment to Clinton, or 20, I'm sorry, which put her over the top on their count. Had they not done that, then certainly once New Jersey was called, she would be over the top. We have 126 Democratic delegates. If she were to win by 20 points or so, she would win 70 or so of those delegates, more than enough to put her over the top independent of what happened yesterday.
And Thomas Edsel, since we were talking about some of the wild cards that might happen, the meltdown in the Trump campaign and Senators Kirk and Lindsey Graham and Jeff Flake calling for a contest against Trump at the convention, and the others calling him for him to drop out, or they're unendorsing him, I guess is the way to put it. What do you think is going to happen then? Are we going to have a peculiar phenomenon in this election where the populists on the right and the left who feel rejected are going to be kind of rebellious, or are they going to sort of settle for the candidate, whether in the Democratic side it's likely to be Clinton? And how's she going to win over the Sanders people? On the Republican side, who knows what's going to happen? But let's concentrate on tonight's big vote in California.
Well, the rough estimates are that at least 70% of Bernie's voters will come over to Hillary. The 30% is a significant number, however, and her ability to woo them over, it takes these kind of primaries cause very bitter rivalries, and in fact, the hostility between in a primary campaign between the supporters of the candidates can be stronger than a general. A Democrat doesn't like a Republican, knows what he is. A Bernie Democrat views a Hillary Democrat as a complete sellout and views Hillary as a sellout. So it's sort of a more intense hostility than might even be felt in some cases than towards Republicans or Trump. So for her to overcome that is going to be she's got 5 months, I think it is, to work it out, and it's going to take 5 months to do so.
But what do you make of that phenomenon of of in politics, where on the left, people tend to hate people more on the left who are slightly to the right of them than the people on the far right who are really their mortal enemies. And on the other side, Republicans on the right are always complaining about what they call rhinos, Republicans in name only, slightly to the left of them, even though most of them are pretty right-wing.
It's really, it's a, almost universal. The person who defects from what you see as a person who should be your ally but is not is a worse enemy than the person you know is your enemy and you just accept them as they are. It's like Trotskyites and Leninists, or in the history on the left and right of the battles within each party or within each ideology have always been much more intense and much more bitter. I mean, Trotsky was killed when he was off in Mexico and hardly a threat. These things, they're very... I don't know. There must be a good psychological explanation.
Right. Well, I'm not sure. let's stick with the polling and what we know in the factually here. I know there's a tendency to want to psychoanalyze Donald Trump, for example, but it would seem that. That Donald the con is more in line. You know, he's more of a carny salesman type than I know that Senator Mark Kirk today said that Trump should not be let anywhere near the nuclear button. David Redlaw, again, a polling expert and professor of political science at Rutgers University. What's your sense of what we were just talking with Thomas about? This roiling news coming out that the Trump campaign is imploding and he's melting down and that, you know, we're not even, it's not even sure who's going to be running against who in the general.
It's been a fascinating 24 hours or so as this has come to head for Trump. It strikes me that this is one of the, Trump himself has been as quiet as I can remember in the last 24 hours. I've seen, you know, I think there's been one tweet about a poll and the statement that came out. Interestingly, there's some speculation. Our Governor Christie was apparently in New York meeting with Trump sometime ahead of that statement. But in any case, it's not been a very good period for Donald Trump, and that's actually fairly unusual. He's not been able to change the conversation. And I don't think it's going to get any better in the short term, partly because of the nature of the comments. It maybe it's finally over the top, I don't know. But also because, of course, all the focus tonight and into tomorrow is going to be on Clinton, I suspect.
But given that Christie was the first in and probably the last out if the ship sinks, how's that affecting the vote in New Hampshire? Not that that too many Democrats care one way or the other about Christie, I imagine, but is it having an effect on?
Actually, what's happened to Governor Christie here in New Jersey has been fascinating because his personal ratings continued to just sink, and they've dropped since his Donald Trump endorsement. The talk in this state is about how he's spending all his time, or appears to be, with Trump and how New Jersey taxpayers are paying that bill as he travels for his security, travels and all the rest of it. The guy cannot, at this point, really influence anybody in this state to much of a degree. Now, I wouldn't necessarily count him out entirely. He's, you know, been pretty effective in the past, but right now, he's never been this low, and I don't think anyone is looking to Governor Christie to decide what to do.
Well, Thomas Edsel, nevertheless, in spite of all this chaos and this speculation that we're going through, the money's still going to flow in, right? Apparently, Trump has finally looks like he may actually start putting together some kind of a fundraising apparatus. I know he's got his Manafort giving him strategic advice, which apparently he's not taking, and that he's holed up with Lewandowski and Hicks, the two people close to him, tweeting all day and watching cable news, and with Hillary and Elizabeth Warren getting under his skin every time they open their mouths. Somewhat a surreal situation, but nevertheless, what's your sense? Because you know, the last election was what, 6.28 billion, record was set in 2012, and there's an expectation that this year's election could reach 9 billion, most of which, of course, is political advertising, which goes to the mainstream media networks, all of whom get rich off our broken political system.
I think he's going to, that these events this past week are not going to help his fundraising. When he looked like a winner, he fundraisers like to go with winners, and he's been behaving somewhat like a loser this past week. And it's certainly the criticism of him has been very unfavorable, including within his own party. So I think that's going to undermine Trump's ability for the moment, at least, to raise money. Now, how damaging that would be, I don't know. I mean, he has started, and he does have some quite wealthy supporters who have a lot of contacts. How well that's going to work out, I don't know. But let me say, I just got a call from my editor at the Times, and I got to run on something else.
Oh, okay, Thomas.
I really apologize.
No worries. No, I know your column's out tomorrow, yeah. So. Some people have to work for a living.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks a lot, Thomas. And again, I've been speaking with Thomas Edsel, professor of journalism at Columbia University. His column in the New York Times on demographic and strategic trends in American politics appears every Wednesday, and he's the author of The New Politics of Inequality, and his latest book is The Age of Austerity, and he has a recent op-ed at the New York Times, The Anti-PC Vote. And we're continuing the conversation with David Radulov, who's a polling expert and professor of political science at Rutgers University. He's the co-author of the book Why Iowa? How caucuses and sequential elections improve the presidential nominating process. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back with more of Pacifica Radio's national coverage of today's presidential primaries. This is a special Pacifica Radio Network coverage of the primaries tonight in New Jersey, New Mexico, North and South Dakota, Montana, and California. And David Radulov being in New Jersey, where the polls closed about 22 minutes ago. Any news yet?
No, we're still waiting. I got to tell you this. Firstly, it's important to recognize I don't believe there have been, in fact, I'm virtually certain, there were no exit polls in New Jersey today. And that matters, of course, a lot from the standpoint of polling the results, because what generally happens is the media exit polls inform the decision by the various media companies whether to make a call or not. Without exit polls, we're stuck waiting for the actual votes. And right now, there are literally, so far reported, literally a handful of votes. And, you know, that makes a certain amount of sense. It takes time for the individual precincts to report back to their towns and to the county and for that stuff to be aggregated and put out publicly. But I think, having said that, I don't think there's any question about Hillary Clinton winning New Jersey. I think the only real question is how much she's going to win New Jersey by.
But doesn't she need something like 70 more pledged delegates? I'm not sure I've got the math correct here, because it is a little confusing between what threshold we're talking about.
It is confusing, and interestingly enough, I think that part of the goal of the Sanders campaign in recent weeks has been to keep it confusing, for obvious reasons. If you're behind on every measure, you might as well, you know, take every attempt you can to spin the numbers. But the reality is, if at about 60 or so delegates, she will of pledged delegates, she will have a majority. Well, she will be over the top overall, no question about that. That's assuming the superdelegates. And, you know, there's no reason to believe the superdelegates are going to do anything other than what those who have committed have already said they're going to do. But she's also clearly ahead in pledged delegates. She's ahead in votes by several million. New Jersey is just going to put her further ahead. She could, of course, lose California. If she does, she'll lose it by, you know, at the most, maybe a couple points. It would give Bernie some real, you know, bragging rights, but it wouldn't cut significantly into her lead.
Well, since there are 142 delegates up for grabs in New Jersey on the Democratic side and 51 on the Republican side, with 142 delegates, if Hillary wins half of them, she's got the nomination, right?
Right, that's right. And that's why I say she basically does. There are actually 126 pledged delegates up tonight, and then the additional ones are New Jersey's superdelegates. But nonetheless...
Oh, I see. Well, it's pretty close.
At 50%, she would win 60-some delegates. At 60%, she would win 72 to 75 delegates of the pledged delegates here.
Right.
So pretty much no matter how you massage the numbers, she does in fact go over the top here in New Jersey from the standpoint of what will happen at the convention, you know, unless lightning strikes. I mean, I guess, you know, we'll see tonight what Bernie says he's going to do once California's in. But short of an indictment, which I think has a probability of close to zero, I don't see anything changing between now and the convention.
No, I think as we've discussed on this program so far, it would have seen that the uncertainty is largely on the Republican side, where the candidate is... You know, I've been sort of suggesting for some time that I never thought he was serious about wanting to be president. He maybe wants to win the presidency, but I think he entered that race as a branding exercise to improve the Trump brand. And
I agree completely. I think that's exactly right at the front end of this.
Right.
You know, from the standpoint, the Republicans are in a literally impossible position. It is theoretically possible to deny Trump the nomination. To do it, there would have to be a majority of delegates willing to overturn the expected rules, which the convention can do if a majority of delegates wish to do it. I suppose there's a theoretical possibility, because if you may remember, I'm sure you remember a month or two ago, there was a lot of talk how these pledged Trump delegates in places like South Carolina are not really Trump supporters. And outside of their required binding on a first ballot on the nomination, they're free agents.
Well, David, in terms of then of the risk that the specter of Trump seems to be one of the strongest arguments that are out there on the Democratic side. The Democrats usually argue at the end of the day, when they can't make a compelling argument, they say, well, you know, what about the Supreme Court? In this case, they really do have a bogeyman in Donald Trump.
They really do. And, you know, there was a discussion a little bit earlier about whether Bernie supporters would would suck it up and vote for Hillary. I think the number will go substantially higher than the 70% the polls say it is right now, simply because the alternative really is pretty appalling certainly to anybody who would vote on the left. Now, whether people may stay home or not, that's a different question. But, you know, by the time we get down to it, Democrats and Democrat supporters will be solidly Clinton. It's the Republicans now who I wonder about. Historically, they're incredibly cohesive. 93% to 95% of self-identified Republicans and independents who lean Republican generally vote for the Republican nominee. The risk that the party faces overall now is not only Trump throwing that into question, will Republicans vote for him, but the alternative is they may stay home, and down the ballot, Republicans may well suffer as well.
Well, I'm sure Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell are getting an earful from their members about that very fact. Lydia Camarillo is joining us. She serves as the vice president of the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project. And in September 1999, President Clinton and Vice President Gore appointed Lydia to serve as the CEO of the 2000 Democratic National Convention. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lydia Camarillo.
Thank you.
And Lydia, you're joining David Redlaw, who's a polling expert and professor of political science at Rutgers University. And what's your sense then of where the Latino vote stands in terms, obviously it's incredibly significant in California, if not the deciding factor. There's also a generational split in California between young Latinos who are voting for Bernie and their parents who are voting for Hillary. And there is, I don't know how this plays out in New Mexico, but I would think the Latino vote's also pretty critical in New Mexico. So let's start with New Mexico, since the results won't be in for till about 9:30 p.m. Eastern, which is about an hour from now. But what's your understanding of the significance of the Latino vote in New Mexico?
The Latino vote in New Mexico, not any different than what we're seeing in California, is that the older generation, 45 and older, which is 45 is not that old, obviously, but the 45 and older Latinos, and particularly Latinas, are voting and will vote for Clinton. And then the younger generation, I think a good significant number, and it's hard to say because it goes from state to state, and clearly in Colorado, they helped to carry Colorado for Bernie, whereas in Arizona and in Texas, that wasn't the case. But I think in New Mexico is similar to sort of the Texas. There'll be some going for the young folks going for Bernie, and then the rest going for Clinton. But frankly, I'm not sure what we're going to see with the announcement yesterday by the AP of announcing that Hillary had won. It has implications for the down ballot stuff as well, and so I have a feeling that some of the Clinton folks may feel like she won already, why bother? And some of the Bernie folks may decide, well, we might still win. So it's hard for me to tell you right now, particularly because I did not see any exit polls in New Mexico, so I don't have a good sense. But I think that's where I feel good about calling it for New Mexico.
Well, Lydia, that's an interesting point that one doesn't really know how that's going to break, the AP calling early for Bernie, because a lot of my friends on the left are really angry. They're passionate supporters of Bernie, which would suggest that maybe that'll motivate him even more to vote. But by calling it for Hillary, as you pointed out, it may mean that her supporters don't feel they have to bother to vote. So we just don't know how that's going to split, do we?
Well, that's my point. And I apologize if I didn't make myself clear. If things go as they think they would have gone otherwise without the announcement yesterday, right, then I think Hillary would take the vote. However, if the Bernie Latinos are more motivated because, the senator has been very, very clear about asking people to vote and show up, and it's not over till it's over. And so I think that they are going to be angry that they made the call, particularly because Bernie's points have been that until, except for the delegates that are elected through the elections and the caucuses, the primary and the caucuses, the other, the superdelegates will not be voting until the conventions. And so that's a very clear message that he's been sending, not only in his speeches and his rallies that he's been having a lot of, an incredible number of people show up, but also in his emails that he's sending to his network. And as you know, he has an extraordinary donor list and an extraordinary voter list. And so I think that it may very well that it ends up being Bernie taking it. And as you know, the in New Mexico, 36% of the share of the vote is Latino. And so it's interesting. I don't have a good sense because of the announcement with AP yesterday.
And David, by all means, if you have a question for Lydia, jump in.
Actually, I was going to tell you, too, that what's interesting is not only Lydia doesn't have a good sense, but political scientists don't have a good sense. I was doing a little looking today to see what the research says about, you know, calling an election, and there just isn't very much. Way back in 1980, when in the general it was called for Reagan before California closed, there was a lot of concern that maybe it depressed turnout. The research after the fact was completely mixed. It wasn't clear whether it depressed or did not depress turnout. So I think there's good reason to just wonder what this will mean at this point. But it's also worth pointing out that, again, you know, no matter what Bernie wins today, the delegate count is running pretty strongly against him, and it's in my mind really hard to imagine superdelegates, the ultimate insiders, agreeing to flip to an outsider.
So, Lydia, what did you make of Donald? We were talking earlier about speculating with Thomas Edsel and with David Redlawsk about the meltdown on the Republican side, which is pretty visible, and whether or not it could end up, as Senator Lindsey Graham today suggested, that they should be looking for an off-ramp for Trump. Jeff Flake, the senator from Arizona, is saying that he's going to contest Trump at the convention. So we're speculating on the possibility that he may not make it to the convention or may not be ultimately be the candidate in November. But one of the things that first got my attention about the apparent sort of disconnect with political reality or at least political tradition was when Trump went after Susana Martinez, the governor of New Mexico, who didn't show up at a rally. How did that strike you, and how did that just strike the Latino voters to your understanding?
Well, Trump is what we call the Arpaio factor for Arizona, or the Pete Wilson factor for Californians. For the Latino community, Trump is a factor that will energize people to vote, but vote against him. Of course, there's always going to be a percentage that is going to support a candidate no matter what. But I think the majority are going to be voting against him. And there's going to be it already is a huge number of people interested in registering to vote and angry about not only his call on almost the day that he announced that Mexicans are criminals and rapists. And he was very clear about saying Mexicans. And then the second point, I think, is that when he starts attacking a judge, a sitting judge, that is not only an American citizen, but who has a long history, his grandparents have a long history of being in America, that just doesn't make any sense. And then you go attack the governor. I mean, she's popular with the Republicans in New Mexico. She's not popular with the Democrat Latinos in New Mexico. However, there are some Latinos who crossed over because they wanted to see a Latina being elected. So I think that he's not helping himself. I also understand that Paul Ryan and the other leadership are basically saying, be serious, be a serious candidate, run for office. And this cycle, at the beginning of the year, I really was convinced that we were going to see a contested convention for the Republicans. Now I'm convinced it's going to be a contested convention for the Democrats. But this evening, I'm beginning to think we might have a contested convention for both.
Mm.
After all, the difference between the Democrats and the Republicans, Bernie Sanders will argue that of the elected delegates, not the superdelegates, she doesn't have the prerequisite number, and therefore he can challenge her in the convention. For the Republicans, the rules are such that on the first round they must vote for the presumptive new nominee, given the delegates that voted, but then they have to go through a second round and a third round, and in the second and the third round, they are not necessarily bound to vote the same way. So who knows?
Wow. Well, let me just ask you to comment, if you will, on the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project, that of which you are the vice president. Their F the Wall
yes.
voter registration movement. Fill us in on that a little bit, because it's obviously a pretty catchy title, I'd say.
Well, F the Wall stands for Fight the Wall, Register Mexican to Vote, and it's really a Mexican-American to vote. But for shortcut, it's a Mexican. And it is a response to the attacks that obviously Trump has. But it's really about the wall on the border. And it's an opportunity for us to register voters. And it goes in partnership with a couple of other pieces that we have, social media. We have our own app now so that we can register voters in the 31 states who can register online, including, of course, California and New Mexico and Colorado. And then the second piece to it is that, we want to make sure that candidates on both parties cannot vote and should not vote if they want our vote to build a wall. We believe the wall stands for wars. We believe the wall is anti-American, and we believe that there is no need for the borders are already secure. It is very clear that the borders are very secure. And so neither Bernie Sanders nor Hillary Clinton are free of this. In the last cycle, when they talk about the immigration bills that they passed or didn't pass, they both passed in two different bills when Hillary was a senator, and also in the last one, Senate Bill 744, includes building a wall. And so for Southwest voter, we're saying we don't want any walls. They send a message of division, and it's a clear attack, a personal attack on Mexicans. And I think it's going to be a motivating factor for Southwest voter to register many, many Mexicanos, Latinos that are, of course, our U.S. citizens who can vote.
And
Lydia, can I do a real quick ask? Are you seeing evidence of people moving to get naturalized in order to vote? I had a reporter here in New Jersey suggest that she was seeing that here.
That is in fact the case. But think about this: there is about that people who can move quickly because you the naturalization process. People will probably get ready and sign up and get all their paperwork, but it can take anywhere from 6 months to 7 years before they get their naturalization. So there will be probably a million people that possibly can get there on time or less. Mm-hmm. However, there's right now about, we'll get to about 15 million registered Latino voters nationwide, but there's another 15 to 17 million voters, because every year we have 800,000 Latinos that turn 18 and are American citizens. So we have another 15 million or so that need to be registered. And the argument always is that Latinos do not vote or do not care to vote, but the truth is they do vote. They're going to vote at a very high number. We're expecting out of the 15 million registered voters that we are expecting at this point, not counting the Trump factor, that 14.3 million will cast their vote.
We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back with more of Pacifica Radio's national coverage of today's presidential primaries. We'll be right back. And let me bring in Margie Amaro, who's a managing director at Purple Strategies and the former president and founder of Momentum Analysis LLC, a Democratic public opinion research firm based in Washington, D.C., where her clients included the DNC, the DCCC, Mayors Against Illegal Guns, Emily's List, members of Congress, nonprofits, and hundreds of campaigns around the country. Welcome to Background Briefing, Margie Amaro.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Margie, you're joined by David Redlawsk, who's a polling expert and professor of political science at Rutgers University. We're standing by for results from New Jersey. And Lydia Camarillo, who serves as the vice president of the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project. So a lot of the conversations so far, Margie, have been about the extraordinary news of coming today about Donald Trump with headlines like a meltdown and et cetera. And you've got Senator Lindsey Graham saying that they should look for an off-ramp for Trump. You've got Senator Mark Kirk saying that Trump can't be trusted with a nuclear button. And you've got Senator Jeff Flake, all of these are Republicans, of course, saying that he's going to contest Trump at the convention. So given that there's some uncertainty on the Democratic side, although I guess less so as the evening progresses, about who's the candidate going to be, now apparently there's some uncertainty about whether the Republican candidate, who we thought was settled and somehow dodged the bullet of a contested convention, may end up having a contested convention.
I'm surprised that a lot of these folks are now seem surprised that Trump has been saying things that are beyond the pale, that turn off voters, that are fringe, that are extreme. I mean, this is nothing new. He's been using this kind of language for basically a year. And where have these folks been? You know, where was the courage during the Republican primary process? Because I know that a lot of these Republicans are struggling. I know they don't want him as a nominee. But, you know, I think they're going to be hard-pressed to upend his nomination at the convention, given everything that's gotten us to this point.
And what's your sense on the Democratic side? Is this contest between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders nearing an end, or could it continue to the convention and beyond?
Well, look, it's certainly, you know, I guess it can continue. The question is, will it continue, and at what cost to Sanders, and what cost to the movement, and what cost to Clinton? You know, I think folks are going to feel very much energized by her clinching the nomination, or coming very, you know, in all but name only, or just about there, in whether or not Sanders make some moves between now and then. I don't know what the answer is. We'll see what happens. Certainly, you have a lot of Democratic establishment, Democratic voters trying to close ranks. I think in the end, you know, the Democrats are unified. We're going to be unified whether Sanders makes an announcement on Thursday, whether he makes an announcement at the convention. Either way, I think we're going to be unified because we see a common enemy in Donald Trump, and the stakes are incredibly high. And, you know, we're having respectful, you know, the Democrats are having respectful disagreements about some key issues. But ultimately, I think, you know, folks are going to be really excited about the nominee. And Secretary Clinton is the most qualified candidate we've had in decades. And her historic nomination is going to be really exciting. And it provides a real stark contrast with the Republican side.
And David Redlawsk in New Jersey, the headlines, or the breaking news headlines, are that Donald Trump has been declared the winner. Surprise, surprise. And that,
yeah, no particular that,
right.
Surprise and,
but that Hillary Clinton is ahead. So that's the latest. And as you were pointing out earlier, there with 140 plus delegates there, if she wins, you know, half, basically, she's already won the nomination. So that's, we'll just continue to watch that. Do either Margie do either Lydia or David have a question for Margie? Or vice versa? No. Margie, let me ask you then about the amount of money. We talked earlier with Thomas Edsel, who said that among the many manifest problems that the Trump campaign has with its divisions between Manafort and Lewandowski and this apparent dysfunction, that he hasn't got a fundraising effort underway, and that fundraise and big donors are probably pretty skittish about pouring money into what appears to be a confusing, if not dysfunctional, campaign. How do you see the money landscape? Because Bernie Sanders has certainly changed the landscape by getting so much money from small donors, and that I think is in many ways a hopeful and inspiring change in our money-driven politics. But at the end of the day, do you think that whoever the Democrat is, they're going to end up with which hasn't happened before, as I recall, where the Democrats have more money than the Republicans?
I mean, I think it just goes to show the differences between, you know, the strength of the Democratic side versus the Republican side. I mean, the fact that the nominee on the Republican side has been running an operation without, you know, the infrastructure that's usually required to run a campaign, to reach out to people, to make sure voters hear their message. And, you know, those skills translate into being able to run an organization as president. And if you can't, you know, get your surrogate conference call under control, if you can't, you know, set up a straightforward online fundraising operation, if you can't figure out who's your campaign manager and who's your, you know, comms director without public squabbling, that's going to mean a dysfunctional White House. So those things co-vary, right? On the Democratic side, you have Clinton obviously has top-tier talent running an extensive, comprehensive operation all around the country. And the Sanders campaign, while smaller in terms of number of staff, it has had a tremendous fundraising and digital operation and grassroots operation that is going to be valuable to Secretary Clinton in her race. It's going to be valuable to other Democratic candidates running for other kinds of offices.
And Lydia Camarillo, do you think that Bernie Sanders has changed the fundraising landscape in our politics, which clearly we were talking earlier. I think the figures are that last year, I mean, 2012, the 2012 election surpassed all records with $6.28 billion being spent. And there's an expectation that this election will reach $9 billion, most of the money going to the mainstream media TV networks for TV advertising.
So, I think that there's a couple of points related to the money. There was, when you talk about $6 billion being spent in the last cycle, election cycle, not only did it go only to the media, but it was also it was a combination of money that was brought in. The president brought in lots of small dollars, and that's how he won. That's how he began his campaign, with lots of small dollars coming in, and then he was able to bring in more dollars. But I think that the other point about the money is that it's spent, unfortunately, for better or for worse, in only 8 or so competitive states. And when you do that and you spend that kind of money, you're not really growing the electorate. You're not giving an opportunity for the red states to move to the purple column and the blue states to elect even more folks or the Republicans, whichever side you're looking at, to elect more folks from your political party down ballot, which is part of what I think is a big, big mistake with the money. I think the other factor that Bernie is really looking to is, how do you continue to stay true to the idea that it's a grassroots campaign funded by small dollars from individuals that are giving their hard-earned dollars versus corporate America? And I think that part of the conversation that the party should think about, and both parties, that is how do you really begin to change the money so that we have elections that are being the candidates who win and the ultimate person that becomes the president, they're not indebted to the corporate America, which is what Bernie's talking about.
Well, we're reaching the end here of this hour, so let me ask David Redlawsk to have his final comments.
Well, I'll tell you that Hillary is currently up about 17 points in New Jersey. We've got about 7% in. She's doing especially well in North Jersey, the Newark area, the most diverse part of this pretty diverse state. Looks like a pretty solid win for her, I think, here in Jersey, even though it hasn't been called yet.
And Margie Amaro, do you have any final statements? Not that you've... I'm afraid we've shortchanged you a little bit, but any final thoughts on this rather peculiar and continually bizarre political year?
No, I mean, look, I think you couldn't see a bigger difference between Democratic and Republican side with, you know, Clinton's strong... strength headed toward the convention, and the Trump campaign just being a daily disaster, not just for his own candidacy, but for the future of the Republican Party. And we simply don't have that debate on the Democratic side. We're not sort of battling with the very soul of what it means to be a Democrat, with Democrats being embarrassed to defend their nominee. That's not what's going on our side, and that is what's going on their side. And it's sad. It's sad for their party, and it's, you know, sad for our broader political discourse.
Well, I thank all three of you for joining us here today. David Redlaws, a polling expert and professor of political science at Rutgers University, and Lydia Camarillo, who serves as the vice president of the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project. She was the appointed by President Clinton and Vice President Gore to serve as the CEO of the 2000 Democratic National Convention, and Margie Amaro, the managing director at Purple Strategies and former president and founder of Momentum Analysis LLC. I thank all three of you for joining us. I appreciate it very much.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can scroll down on the right-hand side to subscribe to iTunes podcasts. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Took the kids to the park and disappeared.